Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
The championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
Who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with The Second Tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search Second Tier in your podcast app
and hit subscribe.
Coming up today on the Football Ramble.
I think the fact that, and Jim and Andy have touched on it, but he was that Mount Rushmore player, wasn't he?
Yes. They were criticising him. They just weren't being dicks.
Yeah.
even that wasn't enough for Roy Keane.
Who's been phenomenal in the last couple of months, by the way. Probably the best player in the Premier League.
I don't like breaking the rules, but I don't like doing what I'm told, everybody. Welcome to the Football Ramble. Middlesbrough have 1 foot in the Carabao Cup final. It's Wednesday, 10th of January. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Jim Campbell.
I'm Andy Blassett.
And I'm Vidushita Hantharaja. I might as well just keep talking through this bit.
I reckon.
Welcome, everybody, to a wonderful Wednesday at the Football Ramble, which you sounded so disappointed there.
I thought I was going to squeeze it in. Yeah, I thought I was going to squeeze it in.
No, I think
that was the ultimate hospital pass. Come on.
Yeah.
I think you just realised what you're like as a bloke. Oh, yeah, and I'm Vidushita. I'm him, aren't I?
Every day I've got to be this guy.
Why do I always get him?
Why always me? Oh dear. Thanks to Friend of the Ramble, Gavin Alexander, for sending us today's intro line. You can become a Friend of the Ramble too by heading over to patreon.com/footballramble. Get on the Discord, where everybody likes to have a pop at Vish. It's much fun, I hear.
People aren't paying for that, are they? Just have a pop at me?
I think they are.
I'm sad you had to learn about this while we're doing the show.
Might start charging my mum on the WhatsApp group then.
Gentlemen, we start with some sad news before we get to the Middlesbrough-Chelsea game, of course. People already know this because it was announced on Monday that German legend of the game, Franz Beckenbauer, died at the age of 78. Of course, an absolute titan of the game, won the World Cup as captain of West Germany in 74, won the trophy again as manager in 1990, won the European Championship in 1972, as well as the Ballon d'Or twice. Lots of other trophies, of course. One of only three men to win the World Cup as a player and a manager. One of the other two, actually, Mario Zagallo, sadly died last Friday as well. When you talk about legends of the game, Franz Beckenbauer is one of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Just one of those players that is held up as a sort of standard bearer of really that first generation of superstars in modern football, when it was a lot more visible and a lot more accessible to people.
Played in colour.
And not in colour, yes, as well, I believe.
Yeah, that's
one
right.
One of the few to bridge that gap and be an absolute superstar. But yeah, so one of those all-time greats.
Yeah.
And that's a really good point, actually, Jim, about being a groundbreaker in terms of personality and charisma, as well as the way he played. Mm. Because at this point, when Beckenbauer comes into the game in the 60s, German professionalism is quite new. And he is someone who it really creates modern Bayern. Mm. Because remember, Bayern Munich weren't even founders of the original Bundesliga back in 63.
When you talk about modern professionalism, I mean, this will be surprising to some people, but the Bundesliga was only found, or the Bundesliga only went professional in 1963.
Yeah, that's right. And they weren't founder members. 1860 Munich got chosen instead. Now, he was an 1860 Munich fan when he was a kid, but when he was 12 or 13, he had an argument with one of the coaches, and the coach hit him. And the legend goes that he said, right, okay, I'm going to show you, I'm going to throw him a lot in with Bayern. And he becomes like arguably the most successful player in their history and one of the most successful people in their history, because of course he goes on to be the president. Mm. And, you know, Bayern, obviously they're very successful in the 70s when he was a player, but by the time they're in the 80s, they're losing money hand over fist. And him, together with Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, Uli Hoeneß, they modernise the club and make it this behemoth, this money-making machine, and establish them as the preeminent club in German football, as well as just a big club and a big name.
That's how you hold a grudge. You hold a grudge.
It is, yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. But
revenge is living well.
I think that's it. It's amazing what Jim was saying about how he sort of defines a position as a player. You know, there are very few players, you know, you can probably count them on the fingers in one hand, or Homer Simpson's hand, how you mentioned their name and immediately you see the position in your brain. Mm. So, you know,
it took a while to nail that position down because he was so fluid, as Jim was sort of saying.
But when you think, like, Gerard Piqué, for example, the best compliment to him when he started becoming a real star with Barcelona is his teammates started calling him Piquenbauer. Mm. That says a lot. But you think, having done that, what he goes on to do off the pitch almost becomes bigger. So, as you say, wins the World Cup with West Germany. And the way he did it, I don't know if you could do it now. There's this great story about when they're prepping. They stayed in this really nice place by a lake in Südtirol for the 1990 World Cup. And
I thought you were going to say Baden-Baden there.
Yeah, right. They get that. No, that was only defined by one group of people. And so that they arrive there. He sends the advance party. Mm. And while he's off watching, I think it's Yugoslavia in a friendly, they all get on it and have a super time in this in this mansion, and it all gets a bit out of hand. Beckenbauer gets back and he could go mad, but he just turns a blind eye to it and he says, look, it's about having a bit of fun as well. Mm. And Pierre Littbarski says, you know, when you're at a World Cup, you need to have fun. And that really helps him.
Give me the decks.
Yeah, exactly. I think Tim Jürgens from Elf Freunde, German magazine, referred to him as the emperor with a light touch.
Interesting.
And that's quite a good way of describing him.
When you think about, as I say, football from yesteryear, Beckenbauer is always mentioned on the pitch. You know, as you mentioned there, had a huge legacy off the pitch as well. Not always good. I mean, there were allegations of corruption, of course, around the 2006 World Cup.
You get into football administration,
exactly,
it's going to happen, though, isn't it?
But he was that personality, that sort of standing he had in the game, he was always going to be involved. It wasn't just going to be, oh, there he is at a few games in an ambassadorial role. He was always going to be involved. And, you know, regrettably, there were a few things there. But, I mean, when you think of Beckenbauer, Vish, you know, what leaps to mind?
I think the fact that, and Jim and Andy have touched on it, but he was that Mount Rushmore player, wasn't he?
Yes, that's a brilliant way of describing it.
You grow up and you didn't watch him, but he's always referenced by your coaches or teachers or whatever, you delve in a bit, and as you can do now, you know, watch some of his highlights, and just by the way other people talk of him, and you're like, oh, okay. And it feels like, you know, every position has one of those, or at least, defence, attack, midfield have a collection of them, and he was that one. As Andy said, the fact that Barcelona team were calling someone who was integral to their success after, you know, referencing Beckenbauer says it all, really, because I can't imagine many of them would have watched him because of their ages as well. I think also the really interesting thing, I suppose, was, and you know, Andy's story there about the 1990 World Cup was about his charisma as well, and I suppose a lot of people talk about his magnetism and the fact that he was actually quite a chilled guy, despite, I suppose, like the disciplinarian look. And he tells Beckenbauer told a really interesting story about when he meets Bobby Robson at the end of normal time before the penalties, and he kind of walks up there and he's a bit nervous because he's like, right, you know, Bobby's got so much more experience than him, and he thinks Bobby's going to basically try and get in his head, and they basically embrace, and apparently Robson says, we've done what we can. It's up to that man upstairs now.
Beckenbauer's like, we've got this.
Beckenbauer, you haven't practiced. But Beckenbauer says that like he would have liked to think that he would do the same thing because Robson clearly saw a young coach and thought like,
what
are we going to do? You know, fair play. We've reached this far. And the fact that Beckenbauer looks at that in admiration, I suppose, speaks to the kind of personality he was. That he didn't just think like, oh, you know, you're really soft. He just thought like, this is nice.
Yeah, no,
this is what football should be.
I think that's fair. Yeah, and also as well, you mentioned Gerard Piqué, John Stones, the Barnsley Beckenbauer.
Absolutely. Well, this is one of the things that is so fascinating about him. When, and sort of bringing it back to that Mount Rushmore idea, obviously with Pele and with Diego Maradona in particular, and Cruyff to an extent, it's very obvious what was great about them. You know, we've seen the footage, and it's like it's clear as day. Cruyff is a little bit more interesting because he changed so much in terms of how he influenced the players around him on the pitch, and we still feel the echoes of that in management today. Beckenbauer, sort of marauding playmaking defender,
it
almost doesn't make any sense, and it's so fascinating. It's the most interesting of those kind of figures from that era.
Yeah, definitely, and even the fact that people doing Beckenbauer things now are properly difference makers in elite teams says a lot, really, about the fact that he was. I mean, he must have made mugs of so many different teams at the time. I remember growing up through the '90s, and the player, because he was German, the player who was always talked about in that mold, and when you'd watched him, you were like, oh, I think I kind of get it. Was Matthias Sammer?
It all speaks for itself, doesn't it? So, yeah, he says it sadly died this week, as we say. Gentlemen, let us move on to Middlesbrough 1, Chelsea 0. That happened last night. Middlesbrough head to Stamford Bridge with a 1-0 advantage.
Although you did jinx them with that in line.
One foot in the final. And of course, these two played a couple of cup finals back in the 90s as well. Chelsea won both of them. It's a chance for revenge.
Yeah, one foot in the final, one foot in a bucket of Carabao. Which one is going to... Which one will win out?
Yeah, that's true.
Tripping over the threshold of the final.
Well, what about this, Vish? Michael Carrick is aiming to become the first of the England golden generation to win a trophy in England as a manager.
How do you do it, pod after pod? I don't know how you do it. It's amazing.
Not bad, is it?
Win a trophy in England. He's seen Hadrian's Wall. It's like, right, hold on. Not going north of that.
Still there.
I mean, maybe this is putting too fine a point on it, but we always talk about, like, you know, the positional smartness or rather the intelligence of reading of the game that you'd have in different positions. And, you know, you look at someone like Michael Carrick, you look at someone like Xabi Alonso. I'd like to think during their playing careers, a few of us saw them and thought, oh, they'd make really good managers because just the way they play the game, the way
Coach on the pitch, etc.
Exactly, yeah. So maybe it's not a surprise. I mean, he's still got a fair bit of work to do.
I think there's probably, there'll be a lot of people thinking, oh, there's examples where those types of players haven't gone on to be good managers.
Of course.
The margins are tiny, aren't they, for those who can't succeed.
But it's a common trope, isn't it? That kind of player,
we like to assume that,
But I mean, do you think they're all in a WhatsApp group? A golden generation. Well, look, one of us has to. Michael, it's all on you now.
Come on, Michael.
Paul Scholes just mugging everyone off at every opportunity.
Lampard came close with Chelsea.
Wazza has read. Well, I've lost my job, so it's all on you now.
If they were in a WhatsApp group, I don't think Carrick would feel the need to reply. He has that aura about him that he's not doing it for sure.
Blue tick everything.
He's just doing his own thing. I mean, I think that's the remarkable thing. We had this discussion, didn't we, before we came on about, you know, how many people actually pay attention to what Middlesbrough are doing if you're not a Middlesbrough fan or you're not in the Northeast, because, you know, they've drifted. They've been in the Premier League, what, once in the last 16, 17 years now. It's been a long time since they've been in a lot of English football fans' consciousness. And I think, in a way, it's helped Carrick to be undercover. I mean, I look at the work he's doing, and you can talk about all those other coaches, and, you know, it might be quite a spurious way of grouping them together, but it looks that he is going to be quite clearly the best coach of any of those guys. And I think it's his manner, it's the way he speaks about the game, it's the way he speaks to his players, it's the way he speaks to journalists.
And how is that, Andy, if I may? Because
extremely thoughtful.
Right, because when he was a player...
Never raises his voice.
Right, so when he was a player, that's it, that when he would do the interview, he always came across as shy is not the right word, but a bit reserved maybe, and a, perhaps a sort of strong,
I think,
silent
quiet
type.
But assertive. Maybe, yeah. is the best way of describing yeah. that, and you really get that now. And I think because Middlesbrough have drifted a little bit from the promotion picture, they're in mid-table at the moment. They're only, I think, 4 points off the playoffs mm-hmm. at the moment. I think people can look at that and the way they went out in the semi-finals of the Cup, the playoffs last season, and think, oh, well, maybe it's drifted. Maybe he's having one of those mm-hmm. young manager second seasons that young managers have. I don't think that is the case. Their injury list is horrendous. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't watch Middlesbrough that often, but I could have picked what team they were going to put out last night because they haven't really got much choice.
Yeah.
And you think of the players they brought back. I mean, I went to see them against Villa on Saturday. And
only narrowly beaten as well.
Yeah, they're yeah. only narrowly beaten. Very good defensive performance, which is not really Carrick's game, but that they can switch to that kind mm-hmm. of game, I think is quite impressive. And it would be useful, obviously, if they came up to the Premier League, because it's a frequent criticism made of Premier League teams. You know, you think of Jovanovic's Fulham, for example. They come up and try to play the same way they play in the Championship mm. and they get torn apart. I don't think that would happen to a Michael Carrick team, for what it's worth, because I think he's got a little bit more of a varied palette about mm. him. But, you know, they've got this ton of injuries, which you think is easing off. And then Emmanuel Latte-Latte, who starts the game up front last yeah. season, he gets injured 5 minutes in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bangura has to go off after 20. Yeah. And you look at we can talk all day about the resources that Middlesbrough have got compared to Chelsea. But when you're playing a team with massive resources, that's a huge pisser. That's yeah. really difficult to deal with. And they did deal with it. And, you know, I know Chelsea missed their chances. And, you know, let's not get into coating off Cole Palmer, because he has been their best player this season.
He's finished.
By by some distance. Mm. But what Middlesbrough have managed to do, given that they've got a squad that's almost down to the bare bones, and they've had to play two fairly well-resourced Premier League teams in the space of 4 days, I think is really impressive.
It was impressive. Hackney, of course, got the goal, and not one to be among the goals that much, Jim, but it was a lovely little finish.
It was a lovely little finish. Mm. The celebration was beautiful as well.
Oh, the crowd! I mean, the talk about 12th man. You
but
know.
You sense it's lovely when you see a team in a situation like this appreciate just how massive it is to have taken a chance like that, because Chelsea had a lot of chances. They carved a lot of chances. As you say, Cole Palmer missed a few, and Cole Palmer's been fantastic this season, as you say. So, you know, you've sort of been let off the hook a little bit mm-hmm. there. But yeah, that energy was, it was such a shot in the arm at such an important time in that game. Mm-hmm. And I think it sort of, essentially, it gave them the resilience to sort of not cling on as much, but just hold firm.
I think
that's it, holding firm, because they gave it more of a front foot go than they did against Villa.
Well, they were on the front foot straight away. And I think that's it, Vish. You know, when you're the smaller side and you go a goal up, obviously, it changes the tie, but it's not a question of hanging on, but you kind of go, right, we don't have to maybe overcommit, perhaps. They were solid in all they did. Yeah, a little bit of rub of the green and so on, but I thought they were worthy winners.
Yeah, definitely. I think they did. Just to use Manchester United as an example of a Premier League team who struggle but still have the name in the shirt.
Right.
I think Wigan, for example, on Monday night, and we're going to talk about that game a bit later on, but I don't think they really went at United in a meaningful way beyond that chance they had at the start. Whereas Middlesbrough, throughout the first half, and I appreciate, you know, Middlesbrough and Wigan, very different teams. Middlesbrough, a far better team. But they went at Chelsea in quite a constructive way.
But Jones was great on the right wing.
Yeah, no, he really was. I mean, even little things like, it's quite a novelty. I know he was playing wing back, but it's quite a novelty having a right-footed player on the right wing. But even
that's the way you got to do it. The fullbacks aren't used to it. He's going down that way. Normally I'm going that way. It's strange.
I'm supposed to show you outside.
Where's your car?
Going into the crowd.
Shouldn't you be over there? Yeah. But there was a bit of, like, you know, we talk about those kind of teams working hard when there is that mismatch, but you also have to work hard in attack, and you don't really see that. I think a lot of the times it's when you're without the ball, but just keep going at them. And I thought they did that very well.
It was a lovely goal.
I also think that if you'd never seen Chelsea, or rather, if you hadn't seen this Chelsea this season, they're in that weird space where you could watch every game and know what their kind of seasonal problems are. Mm-hmm. And
it's like if you were watching Neighbours in the early 90s.
You miss a couple
of episodes and you just pick it up again straight away.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's not necessarily a sign of a good show, is it?
No.
But they were...
Oh, you're baiting him now.
Oh, you won't find me defending Neighbours.
But they,
I wasn't into Home and Away, just for the record.
Yeah,
carry on.
You assumed that you'd be. Yeah, exactly.
Home and Away Ultra.
You could dislike both.
Yeah. But there were the loads of random individual moments where they got good players. Mm-hmm. And then they just passed the ball to where the other, where their teammate was, where, mm-hmm. Where they were going to be. And you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
You're still not on the same page.
Not on the same page. Very much so, yeah. And Mauricio Pochettino told his players before the game to be more aggressive. And if you read a lot of the comments and some of the quotes from Pochettino, the word aggressive keeps coming up over and over again. And is that symptomatic of the disjointed nature of Chelsea at the moment, do you think?
I think it's symptomatic of the recruitment and the sort of characters they've got in the building. Well, maybe characters is the wrong way of putting it. Profiles, maybe.
But if you don't know what you're doing or it's a bit disjointed, it's unlikely you're then going to kind of really go too far.
Yeah, if they were...
But he means aggression in terms of assertive, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think,
well,
I think so.
He means pressing, really, right? If we're going to really boil it down.
I guess that's group organisation, isn't it?
Yeah, but the fact is that it's just been interpreted in different ways in this studio.
Yeah.
Again, it shows you
that's true.
What it's a little bit bitty and all over the place.
I kind of think if they were an NBA team, they would be one of these work in progress. They look like a college basketball team, really, in that there's loads of talent, but you think, where are the grown ups in the building?
Mm.
And actually, the grown up we're talking about it before, it's Cole Palmer.
Yes.
Yeah.
A player with next to no Premier League experience before this season. Mm-hmm. I know they paid 40 million for him, and my goodness, he looks worth it. But he shouldn't really have to be in that position. I mean, he was interviewed, wasn't he, on Sky before this game, and it was broadcast before this game. And he said, I wasn't really expecting to play as much.
Yeah.
Which I think is interesting.
And Conor Gallagher's got the captain's armband.
Yes.
And there's talk that he might be sold.
Yeah.
Again,
yeah.
None of this makes too much sense, really, if you think about it.
It's the FFP thing with Gallagher, isn't it? Because he came through the academy.
Pure profit, etc.
Which actually is a strange thing, because we're starting to see players possibly getting sold instead of, getting a chance to stake a claim in the long term. So it's like having this weird knock-on effect on academy players.
Are you saying they're Barcelona'd themselves?
Possibly. Who knows?
Pull the lever.
No. Not Roman's old lever. No, not that. Yeah.
That's just a trap door.
But I mean, when you say it makes sense to sell Conor Gallagher, in pure numbers, I understand the point.
Yeah. Oh, I don't for a moment think it would be
a good
footballing decision.
And I understand that was the point you were making. But from a footballing point of view, why on earth are they talking about selling the guy who's got the captain's armband?
And how do you feel like that? How do you feel about that if you're Pochettino?
Yeah, because he clearly loves
the question.
Doesn't he?
Yes.
And again, you think, okay, well, we could sell him for, 40, 50 million, whatever it may be, this chat that's supposed... Well, that assumes that you're going to find someone who's going to directly replace him. I mean, apparently the club's hierarchy have been impressed with Gallagher, as I think we all have been this season. But you sign a chap for over 100 million who's done okay, but... we don't talk about Enzo Fernandez putting in brilliant performances.
He's genuinely going to ask which one you mean.
That did narrow it down.
Yeah,
but none of them are in conditions to really succeed.
No,
it's not a knock on the players, is it?
That's not me having a go. Enzo Fernandez is clearly an extremely good player. Moses Caicedo is the same. But that's what I mean. If they think the club's hierarchy think, I tell you what, we can cash in here because then we can sign someone really big. It's like, I think you've tried that. You have a player who's playing really well for you at the moment, who's turning heads, or not turning heads, but he's people are impressed with him. Like, don't sell that player.
But isn't there a concern that rather than to regenerate transfer funds, it's simply to keep afloat?
Well, if that's the case, Andy, then yes.
Because they have spent a shitload of money.
Pochettino has said that he's been told it's not necessary for them to sell players if they want to buy more players. So they've got the most fascinating and confusing finances in world football.
Yeah, it's like an Escher painting of a spreadsheet, isn't
it?
But I don't think he'd say that publicly, though. I don't think he would say, otherwise in public.
The thing is, he's in a bit of a tricky situation, Pochettino, isn't he? Because we've asked already. I mean, he's 50 years old, and we could still have a question. You talked about different interpretations of what he means by aggressive. Mm-hmm. I think we could all have different interpretations of what Pochettino is as a coach at this point. And there will be points, I think, however the rest of this season goes, and I don't think they're going to qualify for Europe, to be perfectly honest, unless they win this.
Because this gets you into the Europa Conference League if you win the Carabao Cup.
Yeah. I think there must be points, there must have already been points, where Pochettino's like, oh, this is much harder than I imagined. Mm-hmm. This is much harder than I imagined. But if they sack him, where does that leave them? Mm. If he walks away, where does that leave him?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think...
That, you know, it. What can we really say about... If you
they
were
won't,
another,
I can't
if
imagine
you're,
they'd sack
if you're
him.
Another big club, but say it ends in an unsuccessful way.
Yes.
Who takes him next? Mm. What big club says, oh, I'm really impressed by what Pochettino's done over the last 5 years. We'll spend the 10 million a year it costs to pay him or you know, whatever it costs to pay
him. They wouldn't
be able
to afford it, but Southampton would have him back. Spurs won't. He's even burnt the bridges with the club or the fan base who absolutely adored him, of course. It's a funny old situation.
I think with Chelsea, though, and you know, this has been the case, or I've been saying this for a while, it seems very clear to me. They've got very, very wealthy owners. They've signed young players on long contracts who are clearly very, very good. I think that, like, Boehly is happy to take the hit of a few years being a bit mad, I think.
We shall see. But they need to overturn this in the second leg, because if they were to go out to Middlesbrough, no disrespect to Middlesbrough, of course, but Chelsea, with their Premier League status and finance, it would be a huge upset.
And where they are in the table, it's a massive opportunity missed.
It would be, yeah. But, you know, all to play for in that second leg.
It's another, you know, as we've been saying recently, it's frustrating that these games are two-legged. Because Middlesbrough could be through here.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, chaos theory, you know, if it is just a one-off affair, you know, then...
The game's probably different. They're
all that kind of stuff. But you're right, it is a bit of a shame.
But having said that, it's slightly different to normal two-legged games, because I think in most situations, you would be thinking, oh, okay, the class and talent will tell in the second leg. Chelsea could play really well in the second leg and still not win it, because they're so bad at actually putting their chances away. Mm. So it's a really interesting second leg.
Well, look, yeah, and another clean sheet for Middlesbrough would do it, because they've got three clean sheets in the Carabao Cup this season, more than any other side in the competition. You see, so yes. Andy, AFC Wimbledon were involved in a cup match last night. It wasn't the League Cup.
Yeah, I mean, I was sort of sitting here thinking, EFL Cup, it's all about the EFL trophy, really, isn't it? Or the Bristol Street Motors trophy.
Is that right?
Its full name.
That's lovely.
I mean, obviously, it has been essentially devalued by having under-21 teams from Premier League teams in it. But the fact is, I don't live in London anymore. Can't come to the games most weekends, so beggars can't be choosers.
But you were there last night, as were about 200 Oxford fans, who your boys abused, saying your support is effing shit.
I just hate that. Mm. I just hate
I love
so
it
so much.
But what I find is that when people sing that at the you know, couple of hundred or whatever it was, Oxford fans who have made, you know, fairly long journey in the freezing cold to watch
in
their
midweek.
Team, in midweek, it's like, no, you should give, it's the people who aren't there. You know, so I don't know.
So this should be more of like an email campaign.
Exactly, exactly. You shouldn't slag off the people that are there.
Yeah, well, I don't think they were slagging off them. They were slagging off the people they associate with. But I still think it's
your
it's nonsense.
Associates are shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Very different.
But we saw again.
It's one of those chants that you get all over England, and I hate it.
Fine, but you did see an outfield player go in goal.
Oh, I mean, don't we all love that?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it was in the closing stages. The Oxford goalkeeper got sent off for a professional foul, and so one of the outfield players went in goal. And while he's taking ages to get changed, you think, oh, such a shame there are substitute goalkeepers. This is fun.
Yeah.
And every time Wimbledon got the ball, despite being 2-0 up and essentially needing
Shoot.
To keep... Exactly.
Yeah.
For like 5 remaining minutes plus 5 minutes of stoppage time.
Love it. Bloody love
Beautiful.
It.
Beautiful.
All right, everybody, before we go for a break, a reminder that every Wednesday we release an extra long version of the Football Ramble exclusively for our Patreon subscribers. On last week's edition, we tried to decide which footballer should get a knighthood. And of course, there was only one answer.
Who would you knight in football right now?
Andy Brass.
Bellingham,
that's a good one.
Yes. Let's just get it done.
Yeah, get it done now. Get out of the way.
Yeah, when we were talking about retiring jerseys, obviously the number 10 Argentina FA stuff, if England win a major tournament, retire all the starting jerseys. In goal, number 27.
Yeah. It's just going to look like an NFL offensive line. Yeah.
But that would be like England after the Ashes, wouldn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. I always find it odd when people get a knighthood or become a dame when they're really young.
Sir Luke Littler.
Yes.
You see, it's that type of banter that you can get.
Everybody. We're so funny, aren't we?
Did you see Jude Bellingham, he of the soon-to-be-knighted variety, was talking about Jamie Carragher's like best 11 of 2023. And up front, you've got Harry Kane, I think it was Mbappe and Messi, I think, which, you know, not too much of a stretch. And he went, yeah, there's a lot of walking up there. Not enough. like he just sat back in his chair. Yeah. Not having it. Right, well, on today's Ramble Uncut, which of course is the extra long version, we're marking the anniversary of the Davy Cameron is a pie tweet, which apparently Jeremy Corbyn didn't share on Twitter, as it was called back then. And we're going to share our favourite ever posts on X. To get that extended edition of the Football Ramble in your podcast app today and every single Wednesday, all you have to do is become a friend of the Ramble by heading over to patreon.com/footballramble. You'll also get ad-free shows and access to the Ramble Discord, where you can slag off Vish. Sign up now.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This episode of the Football Ramble is sponsored by BetterHelp. Life throws many different challenges at us, and as a result, we all have our own sources of stress. Whether big or small, those stresses can impact our lives in unpredictable ways, and if we don't address them, they can have an outsized and unwanted impact. Therapy is a safe place in which we can address these issues, learn to understand them, and find ways to work through them. Having therapy can be beneficial to anybody, not just people who've experienced major traumas, even if you may have not considered it before. It could be simply a time for you to get things off your chest, a way to learn positive coping skills, or how to set boundaries. Ultimately, it can be whatever you need it to be. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire and BetterHelp will match you to a licensed therapist. You can even switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
This is stayed down.
You would too, Chris.
Yeah. You hit him in the penis.
In the penis, everybody. In the penis. Right, let's have a bit of FA Cup chat. Manchester United beat Wigan 2-0 on Monday to finish off the FA Cup third round. What a way to do it, Vish, eh?
Thank you. Yeah, You left it to us. We delivered.
Yes.
Headliners.
Your headline act of the FA Cup third round, everybody. It's Wigan versus Manchester.
Has anyone come on and cleared the pyramid stage?
Rasmus Højlund.
Oh, yeah.
No, when I say cleared it, as in he kicked a football right over it. Yeah. It was actually a diving header.
Leave him alone.
Yeah, Roy Keane accused Ian Wright, Roberto Martinez and Ali McCoist of being too kind for having sympathy for the striker. I'm not sure they were, actually, because Ali McCoy, when he missed that header, when he, I think he flicked the top of the bar, he's like, you've got to be putting those away.
They were criticising him. They just weren't being dicks. Yeah. I mean, even that wasn't enough for Roy Keane.
Yeah, that's it. No, you've got to stick the boot in. We did. No, I mean physically. Stick
make
the boot
him
in.
Feel shit about himself. Yeah.
Make him physically hurt. And
put on a more robust boot then. You have to.
Yeah. It's a shame, though, for Rasmus Højlund. I think, you know, we wish him well. We wish, you know, I think nowadays, you know, you think you don't want to sort of slag off a player too much, partly because I think, you know, in terms of like emotional well-being and so on, you don't want to be too
much. Basically, you want to do it constructively.
Yes, yeah. but also, on a much more sort of unimportant level, you don't want people to clip up what you said previously and then play it back to you.
So that's you saying, without actually saying it, that you think he might come good.
Yeah, maybe.
And we'll take that.
Are you concerned that he won't at this point, Vish? Because, I mean, they are some proper sitters there.
Yeah, that's
and it,
it
makes
Jim.
You wonder
that's
if
it, they... Jim. Lay the trap for
it's
the
not
clip.
The first time, is it? It's not the first time that this sort of thing has happened. And his goal record at Atalanta wasn't exceptional. And it makes you think, is this a guy who is never going to be prolific? Are you concerned about that, or do you still think that he's just kind of waiting to explode?
Well, it's like Andy said, I think a few weeks ago, about, you know, Højlund is the younger striker you buy alongside the bigger striker. So he doesn't have to, you know, he is not exposed to so many minutes and can basically work it out as he goes along, basically get given the time that young players need to get up to speed. In terms of worry about whether he'll actually come good, maybe worry is not the right word, because I've just seen so many players recently at Manchester United either not come good or fester, or as we've seen with Rashford, have a brilliant season last season and just, you know, have his form fall off a cliff.
That's the issue. That has to be at the front of your mind in the week that they're getting rid of Jadon Sancho.
Yeah,
doesn't it? Really?
Oh, well, I mean, that is a great one. I know people talk about the fallout he had with Ten Hag, but it wasn't like leading up to that game, you know, that there was a sense that this was a player who'd like finally cracked it. You know, he had a really, really tough, tougher than Højlund, really. Sancho had a really tough start to his Manchester United career. And, you know, for a while, it's been a case about the environment they've been in, and who knows if it's going to change under the new football ownership. But yeah, not so much worry. There feels like an inevitability to it, in part because of how United played. Obviously, he missed chances against Wigan, but he's almost subsisted on very little over the last few months.
Why on earth did Manchester United not get Jesse Lingard back in there? We saw the effect he had on West Ham.
I mean, I do know, but, but yeah.
Surely the type of guy who's going to give everybody a lift. He'll be, honestly, if they re-sign him, he'd be among the goals straight away. It would only last a few months, but my goodness, what a few
months. If they're not careful, he'll offer himself to Barcelona and they'll take him up on it.
Yeah, apparently that's what's going on, everybody. He's reportedly offered himself to Barcelona, as Jim just said, but I just wanted to restate that just in case you thought, yeah, that was surely that's bollocks. No, apparently he's offered himself.
Would you not want to see him at Inter Miami? I'd love to see him at Inter Miami.
Well, he was training with Inter Miami and they didn't, by all accounts, want to sort of take him up there. So
I think he's tried.
He's got a great, you know, have a little think here, isn't he? He's offering himself to Barcelona the best starting point.
Well, it wasn't his starting point. As we say, he was training with Inter Miami. I think that he's...
Yeah, but and again, he's not got a contract there. That's what I mean.
Yeah, well, he went to Saudi. Oh, yeah. Here we go. Here you're splashing the cash. And they presumably didn't offer him anything. Paul Scholes has not been too happy with Jesse Lingard for posting pictures of himself working out on Instagram. Scholes replied, are you just going to fuck about in the gym or are you going to actually play some football?
Which is amazing because they clearly know each other personally. They would have played together at Man United. There would have been some crossover there, you would think, towards the end of Scholes' time.
Possible.
I mean, is he not trying to play football?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the point.
Is he not trying to get a club? It's just completely like worthless tweet, really, isn't it?
From Scholes.
Yeah.
But I think it was a joke with a bit of truth kind of, you know, led into it or led through it.
Right.
In terms of like, oh, you know, when are you going to sign for a club? In that Scholes wants him to sign for a club and actually be playing football.
It's obvious that he's had a really hard time. I mean, obviously the root of it is in the fact that he made a poor decision to sign for Forest for 1 year. But I mean, you know, I don't think part of being part of someone's community or part of being part of someone's football community is turning around and go, oh, well, you made that mistake, so you deserve to be punished forever.
Andy, I think you can be forgiven for not picking up on Paul Scholes' humour, if indeed that's what it was.
Yeah.
He's quite a brusque fellow, isn't he? I think it's fair to say.
Yeah. Either or, we want Lingard back playing football, wherever that may be. Because
I mean, he was fantastic for West Ham.
That's what
it?
I mean.
It was a reminder of what a joyous player he can be when the environment is right. And it's a real shame that he's not been able to find that environment.
You know what it's like? It's like when Balotelli or Ben Arthur walked out on Nice because they thought there was better around the corner, and there wasn't.
Right.
And those decisions pretty much finished their career at the top level. Mm-hmm. And you look at Lingard and like, there's still the temptation to think, oh, he's a young player. He's not.
No.
He's
31.
He's not. You know, he needs to play now at the top level or it's over.
Mm-hmm. He's clearly waiting for a club that he feels is befitting of his own perceived quality, which I don't have a problem with at all.
Or big wages, hence he was going over to sale.
Well, I mean, that's part of it, isn't it? That's part of how you perceive yourself as a footballer, Because he's unattached. He's not getting paid at the moment. You know, it's what he sees as his value. And it is sad not to see him playing football. But I suppose from our side of it, because of how little information we have, mm-hmm. kind of think you need to lower your standards a bit or be a bit more realistic of the way of the world. I think it's easy to look at Saudi and think there's loads of money flowing around in football. But even what we talked about in the first half about Chelsea maybe having to sell Conor Gallagher to balance their books, having spent all this money, it feels like the sands have shifted a bit and players like Lingard are probably seeing that at close hand.
We've got our Paul Scholes there.
That's it. whereas if you compare it to, say, David De Gea has had a lot of offers, but according to some people, he is actually enjoying a bit of downtime.
Right.
And is just kind of weighing stuff up. And, you know, I think if De Gea wanted to, he could probably...
That's an extraordinary approach, though, isn't it? I mean, if you do that as a coach, if you take a year out as a coach, that's fine. When you're a player and you do that, people look at you and ask what's wrong with you.
Yeah.
Don't they? It's incredibly risky.
Worked for Landon Donovan.
it's also important to point out that in terms of first team minutes, for someone who's been around as long as Lingard has, he doesn't actually have that many.
No.
Mm. Spent a lot of time as a substitute. When he was you know, establishing himself as a good player for Manchester United, he still wasn't a regular starter week in, week out. And it was only really the West Ham stint on loan that you thought, all right, this is what you can do with a proper run of games.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are links to Everton, which might just be lazy because it's obvious. Because obviously,
Dyche is not interested, surely.
Would you have said
David Moyes would have been interested in a Jesse Lingard type player?
Dyche is shopping from a very limited market, isn't he?
True.
So if they can get players in on a free, he might think about it.
He might think about it. Well, gentlemen, back to the FA Cup. Of course, the draw took place on Monday. Manchester United will be playing League Two Newport or National League side Eastleigh. They'll be going away to the winner of that tie. So, not a bad draw for Manchester United. Vish, you've got to be happy with that, I would say.
Yeah, I just see banana skins everywhere now.
Maidstone United, the lowest ranked club left in the competition, will travel to Ipswich Town. Now, we said that you either want a game where you think there might be a slight chance, you know, maybe play against one of the more lower...
Worst possible draw.
Do you think it's a worst possible draw?
It's worst possible draw because, with all due respect to Ipswich, I know they're trying to get promoted to the Premier League and they're previous European trophy winners and they've got a great coach and all that sort of stuff. It's not playing a top Premier League team and you're not going to win it.
Yeah, you are right, but...
It's the worst of both worlds.
It's a nice ground.
But I think you could spin it in certain ways as it wouldn't be dismissive of the stuff you said about what they're doing now in their history. I think that's how you would sell it and say, look, this is incredible. You know, we're going to play...
They're looking at it as a future Premier League club.
Yeah, and it has been a Premier League ground. You know, I think England played there once fairly
recently.
There
it is. Fucking hell.
What?
You've not even got onto the Sir Bobby statue yet. What's wrong with you?
I was leading up to that, but Jim's just disrespected modern history. As it does.
That's very immoral. You know, I saw the Arctic Monkeys in a pub, so I don't need to see them in the proper stuff.
Yeah, no, I'm saying that go and see them now. You'd be amazed what the front man looks like. So I think I know what you mean, Andy, but ultimately those Maidstone players never thought they'd play in a ground, you know, like Portman Road.
No.
So
true.
So they'll enjoy it, no doubt, even if they get absolutely hammered. The big one, you could argue, in the round is Tottenham against Manchester City.
It's not what you want, is it? Rhythm, really.
No.
It is if you're not a fan of one of those sides.
It is if you're a TV exec.
yeah, very much so, yeah. Tottenham, of course, have confirmed the on-loan signing of Timo Werner for the rest of the season. Andy, we spoke about this on Monday, you weren't on the show. But having, you know, being a man who's much more in tune with the Bundesliga and so on, what do you make of this signing?
Potentially very decent. I would echo a lot of what you guys said on Monday, really, in that, you know, there's a little bit of unknown to it. I mean, I always think his goal scoring record at Chelsea is a little bit curious because he always got himself in the spot and globally played quite well. Like, he always offered someone something to the team, even when he wasn't scoring. That he got in the spots and missed some unbelievable chances. We know he's a good finisher because we've seen it. If there's a drop-off in goal-scoring records, normally it suggests the defending's better and you can't get in the spots. But he did get in the spots. So it obviously was some sort of mental block or psychological pressure that was weighing on him, maybe because of the fee. Maybe he can play with a little bit more freedom now. The reason he wants to get out is, as I think Vish was saying on Monday, he's simply not playing. You know, he's not Marco Rosa, the current Leipzig coach's cup of tea. He wants to do something different with the team. They've evolved a little bit. I think stylistically, he really suits Tottenham, and he just wants to play so he can get into the Germany squad for Euro 2024. But I think if Spurs have this window where they pick up Werner, who, really, with the sort of fee that they've agreed for him, it's almost a freebie at their sort of level to get someone who could potentially be really good for like around 15 million quid is great. And, you know, they've got a little try before you buy as well. And then they're bringing in Radu Dragicin as well from Genoa. It looks like they've beat Bayern Munich to that deal because Bayern were a little late on it. And he's someone who will, because he's big, good in the air and pretty fast, even though he's developing, he will possibly lessen their reliance on Van de Ven, because since Van de Ven's got injured, they've been all over the shop at the back, let's be honest. And part of that is because of the squad construction, and you've had players playing who don't really suit the way that Postecoglou wants to play football. So it's two big moves in the right direction. And to get two good value signings and signings that address needs in that squad in January, in the first half of January, that's already great for
Spurs.
Means
they're more prepared for that tie against Man City, doesn't it?
There we go.
There we are. It's the big picture, of course, here.
Well, also, the you know, I think both will be eligible for the Sunday game with Manchester United as well.
Oh, perfect.
More good news.
So there's a different expectation on Werner now as well. You know, I think he came to Chelsea, hadn't scored, shed loads of goals. Don't think that's necessarily expected of him now, but also Spurs make chances for literal fun. So, you know, it could be a good surprising fit.
Yeah. Going back to the FA Cup, everybody, Leeds have been drawn to play at home against Plymouth Argyle, have been drawn away from home for their previous 13 FA Cup matches. It's quite extraordinary. The odds of them being drawn away for the 14th time in a row were apparently 1 in 16,384.
Everyone's against them. Even numbers.
Even the numbers. Have you seen, there's a new angle of Patrick Bamford's goal that he scored in the third round.
It sounds like a conspiracy theory. It definitely went in.
No, yes, we should say that it did cross the line. Very much so. The new angle provides even more enjoyment and entertainment, we should say. Quite incredibly, I think because we talked about it so much before we came to the studio, it wasn't actually mentioned on Monday's show, so apologies to Patrick Bamford, because that is one of the goals, if not the goal of the season.
When he scored and he went back in to the changing room, he was like, they're going to talk about this on Monday.
Yeah, on the ramble.
And I can only imagine how upset he was when he didn't come back.
He would have been thinking about that before it even hit the net.
Yeah. Maybe I could lay this off. No, I won't get on the show then, will I?
Maybe that's why his celebration was a little bit subdued. He was thinking about us. And we've let him down. I'm sorry, Patrick.
Yeah, apologies, sir. But that was a Puskás, a contender maybe, Andy?
Maybe. I do think Peterborough is a great place to score a banger at. Everything about it, the nets, the camera angles, the contours of the stands. If I was going to score a great goal outside the Premier League, I would want to score it at London Road.
Yeah, and was Barry Fry there?
Let's hope
so. Is that all you know about Peterborough, Barry Fry?
Well, he's talking about nets and camera angles and stuff. You know, I just wanted to add a little bit more colour. You know, any excuse to mention Barry.
Any excuse is good for me.
There you go.
Yeah.
Now, gentlemen, Everton, of course, have got to play Crystal Palace. Whoopee. After that 0-0 at Selhurst Park. Dominic Calvert-Lewin will be available, because his three-match suspension for getting sent off in the original fixture has been overturned.
I really enjoyed Andy Hunter's from The Guardian's tweet for this. Of course, he covers football in Liverpool. And I think he tweeted, Dominic Calvert-Lewin will be available for Everton's replay after Crystal Palace after his ridiculous red card has been overturned. I hate this in the era of Kunzberg when they just like copy and paste the press release.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say that it's egg on the faces of anybody who showed sympathy to the VAR or the referee who made that decision, of course. Yeah. And that would be me. I got horrendous abuse from Jim Campbell about
you
this.
You did.
I don't think that's unfair. You can understand why a mistake was made. I think the world would be a better place if people understood why a mistake was
made. Referees shouldn't make mistakes. We've been through this, Andy.
For the money they earn, etc. If I can offer you an olive branch, Mark,
please.
I'd say it's cake on your face. You know, the egg is within a cake. It's not. True. It's not that bad.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Fulham, been given a home tie against the Piff Posse.
Yeah.
Don't want that. No. I want an easy game. I want Fulham to be given.
It will be if Jordan Henderson's making his debut. But for who?
Well, Andy. Fulham will be playing at home to Newcastle United. So, yeah, I don't know. Let's concentrate on tonight's game away to Liverpool at Anfield. Of course, it's the first ever League Cup semi-final for Fulham. The second leg will be at Craven Cottage soon enough, because it is a two-legged affair, despite my protests. But Marco Silva said that is not enough for him, getting Fulham to their first ever League Cup semi-final. He's got his sights on Wembley. And he does talk a good game, Marco Silva. I know he can bubble up a little bit post-match if things haven't gone his way, or indeed during a game, as we saw last season. But I think there does seem a bit more sort of purpose about Fulham due to Marco Silva. Does anybody have any kind of thoughts on that? Because he's a very ambitious manager, as we've known in the past. He's won a few trophies in country. I think Greece, did he win a trophy? And maybe Portugal as well, did he win something? And obviously in England, it's been a bit of a funny time for him. You know, you think about when he went to Hull, I mean, it was a bit of a sinking ship. Then he was at Watford for a short while, then Everton.
I mean, we're talking about a different level of club that he's been coaching in comparisons to the level of the clubs in the countries that you mentioned.
Yes.
So it's very different.
But with Fulham, he seems to have found a home here.
Yes.
Because very impressive in the Championship, of course, and he's come up and he's established Fulham as a sort of fairly mid-table Premier League side, which is what Fulham had been crying out for a number of years.
And they found each other at the right time. Yes. Really, haven't they? Because if you look at Marco Silva of 5 years ago, he would have had 6 good months with Fulham and ditched them for another job.
Exactly.
Like he did with the Watford move to Everton, for example, was, you know, we talk about a good managerial career being about the right choices as well. Those were poor ones, and it's taken him a while to recover. And Fulham has been a good place to recover from that. But like I said to you some weeks ago, I think like for there to be some sort of silverware acknowledgement of the job that he's done there, I think would be really nice. I think that would be really great, and it's probably a good time to be playing Liverpool. Admittedly, they're top of the league, and admittedly they're playing well, but with the news that Trent Alexander-Arnold's going to be out for a while, who's been phenomenal in the last couple of months, by the way, probably the best player in the Premier League over the last couple of months, like that good, I would say. And you know, Liverpool creaking a little bit, we know Fulham were great last time they went to Anfield as well. And it's all set up for a big, you know, Roy in Europe style second leg at the Cottage. Can Clint Dempsey make a comeback?
Very
generous interpretation of it there, Andy. I think this is going to be tough, isn't it, Marcus? You know, I think I know obviously they scored 3 goals at Anfield last time there, but they did concede 4. Liverpool look like they're in the mood to just
If you've heard any of my output with regards to this fixture, I'm fully aware of Liverpool Football Club's history and their current sort of situation. But I think with Marcus, when you have a manager like, say, someone like Silva, you know, like I do look to him and I think like he gives me a bit of hope. Actually, I know that sounds a bit silly, but for fans with who have not had any kind of trophy wins or anything like that, and playing against the big sides, it's always quite daunting. Actually, Silva is the type of manager I think relishes going toe to toe with the big boys, and we've seen that. Look, this season, you know, beating Arsenal, and Arsenal being a bit of a slump, you know, going to Anfield, giving a good account of themselves, ultimately lost the game, of course. He doesn't seem to be overawed by any of this kind of stuff.
Well, like you said, he thinks this is his level.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think that's the crucial bit of it. And he's also keenly aware of the kind of history. Mm. He wants to become that first Fulham manager to win that trophy. And now, you know, it's a huge order. It's a tall order. You know, Jim and I, we're doing a Ramble Reacts, of course, later. Well, we might be talking about 4-0 Liverpool and the tie's over, but we might not, you know, and, you know, we shall see. But, you know, the last domestic semi-final Fulham were in was the FA Cup in 2002. You know, that's how long it's been. You know, in between, they've reached a European final, but you know, that's it. It's just the funny nature of football. So, yeah, so Liverpool, as you say, they've got injuries, and Fulham, you know, have to kind of capitalise on that. I know it's kind of harsh way of kind of looking at it. You know, Salah's not there, of course, and one or two others. So we shall see, everybody. But yeah, do tune into Ramble Reacts following that game, which will be in your podcast pipes late tonight or early tomorrow morning, depending on what time zone you're in or how you live your life. So there we are, everybody. Thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble, part of the Acast Creator Network. Don't forget, Patreon subscribers, keep listening for Ramble Uncut. And of course, if you're not a Patreon subscriber, do sign up to Ramble Uncut every single Wednesday. Head over to patreon.com/footballramble. Follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter, TikTok, YouTube, and Instagram at Football Ramble. Don't forget to subscribe in your podcast app. Thank you, Andy.
Thanks.
Thank you, Vish.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
And good luck, Fulham.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
The Championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
Who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with the second tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real Championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search Second Tier in your podcast app
and hit subscribe.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.